Now, this middle chapter in the textbook that I used for this slideshow is called Cellular Respiration, but really this chapter is about much more than cellular respiration. The overall process that this chapter deals with is the complete oxidation of an organic fuel. And cellular respiration is just part of that process. It's not the whole thing. So even though you see the word cellular respiration here, or the phrase, really what should be shown there is complete oxidation of glucose. Glucose is not just fuel. It is the master fuel in all cells. And that's not just your own cells. That's cells in general. Glucose isn't the only possible fuel that can be used by cells, but it's the most often used fuel. And for instance, in your body, most of the cells of your body can use glucose and other things. Your brain, though, uses glucose almost exclusively, which is why you have two important hormones, insulin and glucagon, working in opposite directions to make sure that the glucose level in your blood is within very narrow range. The rest of the body, if you run out of glucose, it can go on to another fuel. The brain can't. And when the brain dies, you die. So that's just an example to show you how important glucose is as a fuel. But it's true for bacteria or anything. All cells can use glucose as a fuel. And glucose is what kind of thing molecularly? It's a monosaccharide, yes. And monosaccharides are small carbohydrates, right? Carbohydrates are excellent fuels for reasons we'll get into more later when we look at pictures, but they make excellent fuels because they have a lot of carbon-hydrogen bonds. Anyway, what we're looking at in this opening slide is this green box, which represents, as you see, an ecosystem. And part of what we see here is something I've already talked about as far as ecosystems are concerned, namely that there's a throughput of energy when it comes to ecosystems, meaning energy flows through an ecosystem. It enters. In this case, it comes in as light. It gets transferred and transformed within the ecosystem. But then it exits, the energy exits as heat. On the other hand, materials get recycled within the ecosystem, like I've talked about in an earlier chapter. And that's all the chemicals that you're seeing here in the cycle. All right. The cycle, by the way, is an important point of this slide. It represents the reciprocal relationship between the two major processes that this and the next chapter, the rest of the unit, in other words, focus on. Those two processes that have this reciprocal relationship are photosynthesis and that's the next chapter, photosynthesis, and this chapter, which is the complete oxidation of glucose. Okay? Now, what do I mean by reciprocal relationship? It means, in a sense, that they are inverses of each other. What I mean by that is that one process undoes the other process, and vice versa. They do the opposite of each other. Photosynthesis, which we'll look at the particulars of in the next chapter, is, first of all, not a single reaction. It's many, many reactions. It's a complex biochemical pathway. But any given biochemical pathway, no matter how complex, you can summarize it as though it's a single reaction. You can pretend that it's one step. In other words, it has an input, it has an output. Photosynthesis has as its input inorganic carbon in the form of carbon dioxide. Think back to when I defined organic in this course, which is more than just carbon containing, right? I told you that the graphite in your pencil is pure carbon, but it's not organic despite being carbon containing. So saying that it's carbon containing is not enough of a definition for organic. There are some carbon containing compounds even that are not considered organic, and carbon dioxide is among those. So CO2 is inorganic source of carbon. And water is taken in as well. Those are inputs into photosynthesis. The photosynthetic organism, whether it's a plant, an alga, or a bacterium, or an archaean even, that is photosynthetic, takes that inorganic source of carbon and undergoes what is called carbon fixation. What that phrase means, carbon fixation, is to take carbon from an inorganic source and incorporate it into organic compounds. There's only one group of organisms that are able to do this. Can you guess what that group is called? I've talked about them before. They are the producers. Not all of them contain chloroplasts, but yes. Producers are able to undergo carbon fixation. And by making these organic compounds out of things that aren't organic, that means they now have organic molecules that they can use as food, so they feed themselves. But also, once you have organic compounds, then you can rearrange them into other organic compounds and make up the things that cells use that we've already talked about. All these organic compounds, these macromolecules are all organic compounds, right? Well, the rest of the world, which collectively are called the consumers, are not able to do this. Every organism, producer or consumer, has to have organic compounds because that's what organisms are made out of. Producers can make their own organic compounds, consumers can't. And therefore, consumers have to obtain the carbon that they're going to use to make their organic compounds from compounds that are already organic. We can't use carbon from an inorganic source. We can rearrange carbon. We can take in as food, for instance, organic molecules, because that's what, no matter what you eat, it's some organism that you're eating, and therefore it's organic compounds. We can rearrange those. We just can't make organic compounds out of inorganic compounds. So we do rearrange them, that, you know, we break down the food into individual small molecules, take those in, rearrange them into our own versions of organic compounds, but we had to start with organic compounds to begin with. That's what a consumer does, and that's why consumers rely on producers. All right? So that's what photosynthesis accomplishes that's so important. It's carbon fixation. And the process of taking in this inorganic carbon dioxide and water as inputs through many steps that aren't being shown here means that organic molecules are produced that can be used as fuels, or for one thing. Organic fuels are organic molecules. But notice that oxygen is also produced in the process. Now, the reciprocal of that, the undoing process that undoes what photosynthesis accomplishes also occurs in biology. The organic molecules are inputs to the other reciprocal process, which is the complete oxidation of glucose. Glucose is an organic molecule. Oxygen is also required if you're going to completely oxidize glucose. Those are the inputs, though. The glucose, the organic molecule, and oxygen. Notice those were the outputs of the photosynthesis, though. We take the outputs, and we, in the process of oxidizing the fuel, that's why the whole process is called the complete oxidation of glucose. By oxidizing the fuel, we get energy from those fuels, chemical energy that was in the bonds between the atoms making up the fuel. We dismantle that fuel, though, by oxidizing it. And the result, when what's left over in that process, is carbon dioxide and water. Exactly the things that photosynthesis requires for another round. So there's a continuous recycling of materials, right? Carbon fixation occurs in photosynthesis, and oxidation of fuels occurs in the bottom part. Now, we can think about this as a reciprocal relationship between us animals and plants, for instance. But always keep in mind that a plant is not producing fuels for us. The reason it's undergoing photosynthesis is for itself. And never lose track of the fact that a plant has chloroplasts, which are the organelles of photosynthesis in eukaryotes, but they also have mitochondria, which is where cellular respiration, part of the complete oxidation of glucose, occurs. So yes, this reciprocal relationship occurs between producers and consumers, but it also occurs just within producers. Plants produce organic molecules, which they can then use as fuel to power their processes, just like we can use the fuel by eating the plants. All right, is that all clear? How each process undoes the other, that's what I mean by the reciprocal relationship. Well, why do we have heat coming out of the bottom? Because this involves a lot of steps. Each one is a thermodynamic transaction, and therefore there is some degree of inefficiency at each step. At each step, some of the energy is lost as heat. There's nothing you can do about that. Second law of thermodynamics. Yes. But notice ATP is also shown here because of what we've been talking about in the last chapter. When we burn our fuels, we're not directly using that outputted energy to drive our endergonic processes. Instead, we're using that energy that's output to make ATP molecules, which can then be used for a variety of reasons. In any case, though, when the fuel gets burnt, despite making the ATP, what's left of the fuel is CO2. CO2 doesn't have any value as fuel anymore. It is completely spent fuel. So unless another producer comes along and makes it into an organic molecule, it's done as far as we consumers are concerned. And that's why we get rid of it. The CO2 that you breathe out, that you exhale every breath, that's carbon that used to be in the food that you ate, that was incorporated into the organic molecules that make up the food that you ate by some photosynthetic organism originally, which made it out of carbon dioxide to begin with. Now, to fix carbon, to incorporate it, that inorganic carbon source, into an organic molecule is anabolic, and therefore, not surprisingly, endergonic. Doesn't happen for free. You have to force that to happen. You have to have a continuous input of energy to do that. That's why sunlight's here. Stop the sunlight, everything dies because of that, because there's no longer any input of energy. Okay, this opening slide is just sets the stage for what we're going to look at, but I'll stop. I don't even want to start slide two until next time. We'll stop there for now.